You're listening to the Chasing Tales Outdoor Podcast, where when you can't be in the outdoors, we bring it to you. Welcome back to another episode of the Chasing Tales Outdoor Podcast. My name is Walt. His name is Chase. And today we have got two guest repeat offenders, two guys you've heard from before, two guys you've enjoyed talking to. And today we're shifting gears. We're shifting gears kind of hard, but kind of not at the same time. We'll get to that in just a second. It is summer, guys, which means there is a litany of things to do, especially in the Deep South, especially in Florida. I hope you're fishing. I hope you're out there shooting your bow. I hope you're doing all kinds of stuff to take care of business in the off season, because while it's the off season, it's hard to kill deer if you're not preparing for it. But at the same time, if you live in the Deep South, the fishing is remarkable right now, and you need to be out there doing it. Hopefully you're out there in our Yakking for Bass Challenge, having a good time, catching fish, raising money for charity. We absolutely set a record this year. I want to say thanks to you guys for making that happen. There's a lot of guys who signed up and donated money, didn't even participate. They bought hoodies and just to help fund TakeMeFishing.org, which is out there trying to recruit the next generation of anglers. And whether you're a hunter or a hunter exclusively or not, you can get behind something like that. And you guys have leveraged it hard to do exactly that. And I just want to say thanks right off the top for that. It's been an absolute blast. We've got a week two update coming, and it's going to be something really special. So you guys pay attention. This is going to be a blast. Today we are talking deer. We haven't talked deer seriously since Chase killed his buck on public last year. We've just kind of been moving through the motions. I started looking at the podcast titles, and we talked deer afterwards, but the season was behind us. It didn't quite feel like the same thing. And several of our Patreon members, in fact, both of tonight's guests are Patreon members, are part of our digital deer camp offline. They have been begging us to start talking about deer. In fact, one of them has been imploring that guys start taking it more seriously if they want to kill big bucks like him. So we said, listen, if you're going to be the big buck legend, the South Alabama legend, you got to come back on the podcast. We also went out and found one of the most enthusiastic, positive, hard hustling dudes in Alabama, who last year had, I think, one of his best seasons to date. Speaking as an observer, he may or may not agree with me, but it just was awesome to see him progress and to see the South Alabama legend partner up with him to get him on deer. We have got Brett Mashburn and Ron Wiggins back on the podcast tonight. We're talking gear. This is going to be a BS session. It's going to bounce from topic to topic. We're going to have a good time doing it. Gentlemen, start your engines. Podcast floor is y'all's now. I'm just going to mute my mic. For anybody who doesn't see this right now, I am sitting in a fishing shirt with fishing rods next to me, with fishing tackle in front of me, my brand new wool, black and gray Southern Ground flat bill. I'm still thinking fishing, but I'm starting to think deer, because Brett has talked more trash in like the last 4 hours than I've ever seen in my entire life.
Started.
I didn't start it. I didn't start it. Did I start it? Yeah, I probably did. If you went to my wife and said, if somebody goes to my wife and says, hey, your husband got knocked out because he was talking trash, she would tell you to stop right there. She believes you, and just tell him, when I can post bail on my own, she'll come get me, because I talk more crap than anybody, period. End of story. Chase is talking because he knows it's true. Ron's just grinning, and Brett is waiting for the introduction. So because Brett's not going to take it away, I'm going to tell you what happened. So actually, no, this isn't how this goes down. This is not how this goes down. Brett, you're working on a really cool project. Why don't you kind of tell everybody what you got going over there? Because it truly is actually really freaking sweet what you're doing.
So I'm trying to figure out a way to ground hunt a little more effectively without getting busted. And I want to try like a ghillie suit thing, but I'm actually going to go with basically a ghillie hat, cape, as maybe some people would call it. Is basically just a bucket hat that's already got some webbing on it. And I took some, it's like fishnet material, like 1-inch square. And I took it and cut it out where it'd be long enough to drape down to like my waistline or just a little below. And I attached that to the hat and put a bunch of synthetic ghillie material on it, basically made my own like ghillie suit, but as a hat where you can fold it up real small, throw it in your backpack. You can go in, and if you're going hunting somewhere on the ground, once you get in there and get ready, you just pop it out and put it over, and it drapes all the way around you, so you're basically inside of it until you get ready to draw back. And I've been working on that to try to seal the deal on killing a more mature buck that I had some encounters on and kind of get busted within 25, 30 yards. Just trying to figure out how to be more effective.
Do you have the hat, Brett?
Yeah, I do. I don't have it right here beside me.
Well, run and go get it. We're going to pause this, ladies and gentlemen, for radio identification. So Jesus. Amateur hour. Was it Ron Burgundy?
No.
Ron's going to get a beer. I'm drinking coffee at 9 o'clock at night.
I'm drinking the old trusty Dr. Pepper.
You like your sodas, man.
I am a soda fiend.
You are. You are. You don't drink any kind of like coffee. I've offered you coffees multiple times. You almost always ask for like water, Coke Zero. Are you still on the Coke Zero thing?
I hadn't been drinking Coke Zero very much. I kind of got off the diet drinks.
Yeah.
Drinking the leaded now.
All right, Ron, what you drinking on over there?
Gold.
Oh. Tell me you got a promotion without telling me you got a promotion, sir.
Yeah, this is expensive stuff here. My wife's boss got me turned on to it, and he's a millionaire, so yeah.
Oh, there you go. Wow.
I'm not, but nice. I drink like one, I guess.
Oh, here he comes. Here he comes.
Yeah, I'm moving the section.
Old boy's got himself a woolly bugger. He done turned into a – he caped out a woolly bugger to make this, I think, is what he's done.
Yeah, this would be cool.
It's really
sweet.
Eyes
on this thing.
This is something that Brett has been talking about doing, though, you guys, for quite some time, that Brett and I have – you know, he has – I joke a lot of times about him being the South Alabama legend. But realistically, I do think what Brett does is quite legendary. He puts in an intense off-season effort. He journals and logs everything. And his ability to find like areas of nuance to exploit unpressured areas that are right in plain sight. This, I think, is kind of where some of this sparked, because last year he took, and I'm kind of speaking for him right now because he's getting set up, but he took his ground game to another level. And got really close to some really big bucks on the ground. He got it done in Missouri, but in Alabama he had some really cool encounters. And I think this is kind of what he thinks is like the missing piece to making that a more routine thing. So I'm like hyper like aware of what he's got going here.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I don't hunt from the ground very much. So.
Me either. Not at all. Hardly until like early, it was like January of 2021. I started hunting from the ground. I started getting like really success, and obviously, right. I killed that buck. But I started getting on deer more frequently, and that's when I started talking to Brett about this. And he was kind of already ahead. He was ahead of me in many ways. So, all right, Brett, give him a rundown of what you got here. Remember, some people are listening on the podcast.
All right, so I just went on Amazon. I found a bucket hat. It's kind of like I don't remember exactly where I got it, but the bucket hat is camouflage. It's already got like netting webbed into it, so you can attach stuff to it real easy. And I got this 1-inch brown. It's like a fish net. It's 1-inch squared off of Amazon as well. If you're watching the video, you can see I'm holding it up. And I basically draped this across the hat and cut out just what I thought I needed, you know, just DIY. And then you can go on Amazon as well, and this is a synthetic ghillie material. And this is already a mixture of camo. It's got different greens, tans, browns, blacks, and different colors. So I took this off, and I basically just tied it onto that fishnet. And what I have come up with is what some people have referred to. I actually seen this on another YouTube video, and took it and kind of done some of my own things with it, but got the idea from somebody else. So
was it the Untamed?
No, definitely not.
Okay. He says definitely not.
The bucket hat. And I don't know, maybe you can see it looks like a long cape.
It looks like a hula dress to me.
It does. In fact, yeah.
You can hold it up fairly good, but all you have to do is put it over. And you're basically
camo. Where'd Brett go?
And then, like, it's open in the front, so, like, draw. And I had to do a little practice with it still. But that's basically the concept. And you can take, being it's this net, you can take, like, little limbs, say you're around grass or pines or something, you could take little branches and stick inside so you blend in a little more. But you basically take this, you know, you can get out of it real quick. It's open. You still draw your bow. And I got that where there's not too much hanging over the bill of the hat. But basically where they can't see your shoulder lines, I'm going to do face paint or either a face mask. So that's basically what I come up with. So
I have a question for you, Brett.
I did a lot. Both times I just needed one deer. I needed like two steps on. The other deer, he seen a little bit of the movement of me drawing, and he had just his head around the tree, and his vitals blocked by a tree. So I mean, just by a little bit. I'm also gonna make part of this. I'm gonna put on my bow. I'll make a. The right side of my bow or my quiver, I'm going to make a thing that goes in my quiver holder. It's basically going to be this netted material with the ghillie on it. And it's going to act as a blind. So if you were looking like this, you hardly see me draw back to help hide that movement as well. Just to try to get that little bit of an edge or extra two or three steps I need on them.
Do you think that's going to get in the... like fall off your shoulder or something, like as you're drawing?
No, because I mean it's the net's all the way to here, so I mean, it naturally wants to go over my shoulders and just sit there.
Yeah, I mean it looks good.
Yeah,
I mean I can see where it would definitely help. Yeah, I mean you look like a bush. Just a random bush.
And then when you add that live vegetation in this as well, that should help, you know, a little bit more. But basically, they can't see the human form. And with a natural blind, you should already have something kind of behind you, a little bit in front of you as well. And this right here is just really going to break that human outline. That I feel like it's going to give me the edge. I've heard other guys who's really successful in ground hunting, and they really believe in breaking up the human form, and they've gotten away with a lot with just a ghillie suit, which just is the same thing. It's just built onto a hat where you can get in and out of it easy, just open. And I'm just gonna,
yeah, man, ready. That thing is sweet. It looks really good.
See, it's all just like that.
Yeah, it breaks up silhouette. Looks like it's easy to pack. You can just put it right there in your bag.
How much did that cost you? Would you say?
I would have to look it up, but I'd probably say somewhere around maybe $40.
Okay.
Something like that. By the time you buy everything, but I got enough net and enough material left over that I could literally make a blind, like a stake blind with it if I wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, I could take that net and then make something like that, and you could actually maybe use it as like a ground blind that you could stake up.
Well, Brett, that looks awesome, man. That thing looks like it's going to be diabolically effective this year. Like, that just looks like it's going to be something that it works effectively. It's insanely well. And one of the things we just swapped between devices, so if you hear a difference in the audio here, I'm not able to record to my computer for some reason right now, so we're kind of lumping this all into one audio file. I apologize if it's a little distorted, but it is what it is. One of the things we were talking about while I was making that switch was the fact that you could put that thing basically into its own bucket and not have to wear it, you know, a mile and a half back there, because you walk some pretty insane distances to get to some of your spots. Oh, other spots are right off the road.
And I walk through a lot of thick stuff as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to have to do that with that suit on.
No, but and yeah, thorns too.
Hat on.
Yeah, it folds up decently well. I wouldn't say it would fold up inside of itself because all the material on it, but it folds up small enough you could sit and the top of your bag if you had that much room in your book bag, like 8 inches or something, even fits.
Yeah. I could see that. Yeah, I mean, that you could put it in a stuff sack, probably. You could take that thing, put it inside one of those stuff sacks, and really, like, crank the air out of it and push it down even further, and you'd be off to the races.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome, man. That's too cool. So one of the things that I think is going to be fun for people is you and I are doing something similar this year. I've threatened for years, but I've always been I haven't had the confidence to do this. But that is hunt short pines from the ground. There's a lot of really good areas that are short or immature pines or just immature areas where you can't necessarily get up into a tree. But once you get down, you know, on knees or stool level, there's really neat little shooting lanes. And you see a lot of deer habitat that has that maybe isn't accessible through what is conventional means today. You know, we migrated from hunting on the ground to hunting into a tree. And now we're seeing this kind of swing back to hunting on the ground. Why has this become so important for you?
Well, I'm just trying to get to the deer that I'm wanting to harvest. So
when a lot in the background, yeah, y'all see that
a lot of pressure gets put on in public land and all, these deer really seem to push back into some of them thicker places. And it was also one of my goals last year was to improve upon something I thought I was lacking in weekend or something, and that was ground hunting and calling. So I really worked on that this past year, and it definitely opened my eyes up to ground hunting. It is very, very fun, addictive, and you can do it, and it is difficult.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, you're just getting into it. There's a learning curve. I mean, you're going to mess up way more than you kill, but you can put yourself in positions to have more opportunities. Just say a 3.5-year-old buck or something that you may only have like one or two of a year, you may can have a few more opportunities getting in them thickets like that on the green.
Yeah, that makes sense. What? Go ahead.
I mean, that's the main reason why I did it, and I just knew that's where the deer were, and wanted to go after him, so that was the only way I could do it. That's what I done.
Well, it's going to be harder for you because you're bow hunt only.
Yeah.
So it really definitely adds to it, especially, I mean, you're bow hunting the entire season when other people have a gun in their hand, and probably you would have taken some of the deer that
Oh, no, they could have took every one of the deer that I've seen, because when I seen them, they were within pretty much 30 yards, and I was on full draw on two of them within 20 yards of me. Come oh so close to being able to shoot
40 and 90-inch deer, huh?
Oh, yeah. They look, a 90-inch deer looks 120 on the ground.
Oh, yeah. It definitely looks different from the ground.
Just ask I've been Walker. Fooled.
I shot a what was it? It was a 120 one time, and I swore to God when I shot that thing, it was every bit of 140 inches. When I was like, I have just killed the king of the woods, Mac Daddy. I mean, it was still a really good deer, but when I got to it, I was like, oh, this ain't the deer that I shot. Like, it took some major ground shrink when I got up to it, for sure. Well,
if you remember the deer that almost ran over Walt, he could have swore was a lot bigger than.
Yeah, that was I think y'all put the tape to it wrong, because that thing was a solid 133.
Now I told y'all how big that deer was when I shot it.
He called it.
It was dead on.
Well, he was the only person that had a moment to look at it sitting still, so
only time I've seen it is when they come out of the swamp with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it when I thought Ron was going to shoot me trying to kill it. So when that thing came busting out of that swamp, I thought, dear God, Ron's going to throw that buckshot and I'm going to catch one right to the gut, man. I'm telling you. And he waited, man. He waited, but dadgummit.
Oh, yeah. It definitely looked bigger on the ground. And it's going to look bigger anyways, the area we were at where there's no trees or any frame of reference or anything.
Yeah.
All deer look bigger.
Oh, yeah.
I was shocked when I walked up to it and seen the body of it.
Yeah.
And it's just, I just, I didn't realize how small the body deer were over there.
Yeah, the body looked smaller. I mean, everything. I mean, that's Florida deer for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm sure that deer was rutted down as well.
That's a good point. Yeah, it that was really late season.
20, 30. Some of them lose 40 pounds just about.
I'm taking a probably Sunday. I'm going up to that spot. I'm going to do some bass fishing. But while I'm up there, I'm going to pull my stealth cam. I'm going to run up to that area where you were, Chase, and I'm going to take a camera back there. And I just want to see. I want to see what else is moving through there. Because here's my prediction. Here's my prediction. Okay, I'm going to put that dadgum camera up, and I'm going to get nothing but like 3 points and 4 points and like 17 does. All through the rut and everything. And Chase is going to put in a couple hunts there. I'm going to put in a couple hunts there. Ron and Brett are probably going to put in a couple hunts there. That spot forever will be the gar hole. And the only reason why a 100-inch deer was killed there will be because Chase randomly decided to walk in there that day. I guarantee it.
I do have an update about that spot.
Oh?
Yeah. Our buddy Craig mentioned that they burned that area.
Yeah. Oh, it nice. Looks good, too.
Yeah. So...
yeah, it could have used to burn for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. He said they burned it early in the year.
Oh, dang. I was going to say, when I go out that way one day, I might have to go walk around.
Yeah. Well, my area over there where my camera is. That area where my camera is, there's a lot of rubs and a lot of beds that I found. So I would walk that area for sure now that they just burned it like last week. Literally last week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I plan on walking that swamp edge. I'm gonna come in kind of from the southwest and come up around and walk that whole like piney flat swamp edge that was there, Brett. I'm gonna walk that going back over towards, because you should be able to look in either direction for like a solid 50 yards, as open as it was there to begin with. It looked like it was a pretty decent burn. When I pulled up Sentinel Hub, actually when Craig pulled up Sentinel Hub and sent me a picture of it, the burn line went like right past my camera and curved. And I was like, oh. So I pulled it up a couple times since. And that whole area got burned really, not like burned to the ground, but like a real good quality burn. So that area should kind of be freaking juice, as the cool kids would say, come bow season.
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily plan on hunting there again. So yes, y'all can have at it. I saw after I went back and listened, because I was listening to everybody on the Patreon hunt and the deer encounters and where people were seeing deer. And then I went back and started looking at the map just off of that. And I'm pretty sure that I found a couple of sweet areas that nobody had marked on the map. And I'm going to go in and check those areas and see what I can find.
Well, stay out of my honey holes.
Why? Somebody needs to kill the deer there, Walter. Encounters. We don't want to hear encounters. Yeah. We need some bone on the ground, Walter.
I agree. It's time to lay some bone on the ground for sure. I'm looking forward to it this year. This will be y'all, knock on wood. My kid is sleeping through the night. He's even sick right now and he's sleeping through the night. That is a humongous improvement. So I talked to my old lady and we had a whole conversation about it. And so September, October, November, I'm going to be hunting like one day a week for like a half day, long half day. It'll be a hunt scout type situation. One weekend a month. I've already got it on the calendar where I can hunt for the whole weekend. But then come December and January, it's going to be the three amigos. It's going to be Ron, Brett, and myself running that place into the ground. I'm telling you right now, I already told her. I was like, listen, if I have to give up one of those weekends in September, so be it. But come December and January, that's holy ground. She laughed. She's like, you're gonna have to start telling people no. I was like, I'm gonna do it. I just need you to know. I'm gonna hurt some people's feelings. Hey, you want to come to this birthday party? No. Nah. My son's graduating. Cool, I'll send him a card. I ain't got time for it no more. I got it all done.
Sounds like you'll be wearing a clown suit then.
Oh man, you're gonna be wearing the car. All right, so let's talk about this.
One day a week.
Let's talk about this. So I started making the migration to ground hunting. Have we already talked about this? We hit pause on that. I can't remember if we talked about the details. Did we? No, Ron's over there. Like, Ron.
You just said you ground hunted. You started ground hunting late 20 something.
Yeah. So we ground hunted. It has been growing in popularity. And Brett, he just runs his mouth all the time. I mean, it's just nonstop. Okay. And he's like, I'm gonna kill something from the ghillie. He's like, I'm gonna do something Walt can't do for y'all. Yeah. And I'm going to kill a deer on camera. And better yet, I'm going to do it on the ground. And it's going to be the next Boone and Crockett record for Alabama. And I'm going to shoot it like 10 steps in the heart. I mean, he just laid this whole master plan out there. And I took offense to that, man. I put off this false bravado, but I'm a big, sensitive man. Deep down, I cry at night. A Walk to Remember is one of my favorite movies. Okay. And that hurt me, but it also, I was like, you know what? I can take the sadness and I can channel it into anger and payback. And so I threw a challenge out there and I said, I'm going to kill a deer from the ground on camera before you do. And I've got a whole week ahead of you and I'm tempted to burn every bit of goodwill I have at my new job just to take that first week off in September, screw up all of the fall plans I just talked about just so I can go kill one of those deer before you. Because if you lose, you owe me your ghillie suit and you have to hunt at the Patreon hunt in September in Florida wearing a clown suit on camera.
That's if you kill something on the ground.
Hydrate now.
Big hydrate if. Now.
Oh, yeah. It is a lot harder than said.
And on top of that, he's like, you're not gonna do it, you don't hunt anymore, you know you're just a stay-at-home dad, he's throwing all this crap out there in the polo group. And I said, better yet, I'll give you the lat and the long of the tree that I'm gonna put my back up to when I do it. So Brett's got it right now, and but hold hand to God, I'm gonna FaceTime that joker opening morning Saturday morning when I've daggum killed a deer in that spot.
So everybody contact Ron. You're putting in the highest bidder is going to get the pen. The way you're talking about kill the deer for he does. So I want to throw this out there. Walter is starting a week before me. He has all the camera gear and the setup to capture this. I'm going with, as of right now, one action cam and possibly a cell phone. So
all the I'm bringing you a daggum action cam this weekend, so you don't have two.
That's fine.
Okay, so two action cams and your cell phone.
Well, if I had two action cams, I won't use my cell phone.
Oh, okay.
So you got to get it on film, right?
Yep.
So if you kill it.
Clear. You can't just kill something and it be like behind the tree, be like, oh, nope.
Okay, it's got to be on clear film.
With a bow on film. The shot.
And Ron has everything written down, right? Right. He has all the rules and regs and everything.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I'll save the polos and put them in the bowl prediction thread.
Okay.
I got them all saved on my phone as well.
Me too. Yeah, and I'm throwing all these challenges out to Brett, and then he goes and insults me. The man sit here and goes, you haven't formally accepted this. He's like, I've got everything saved. That way I issued the challenge. I don't have to accept the challenge that I issued. If I'm like, dude, I bet you $50. And you're like, bet. I don't have to be like, yeah, bet.
Because I threw out there, I will take that bet if you were going to send me that camera and on public land.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, public land only. I got the spot. I have had deer in front of this camera every day between 8 and 10 a.m. since January 7th when I put that thing up. It is, as we record this, May 26th. They've gone from rutting to post-rut to losing their antlers. Them jokers got antlers growing right now. There's fuzz on those noggins. Peach fuzz, gentlemen. Peach fuzz.
My whole hope for this is to light a fire under Walt this year.
Well, you done it. Yeah.
Ooh, I hope so.
See if we can get him out there.
How many hours you got in, Brett? Just got him.
I think last I looked was 48 hours, and I don't remember. I think it was like 28 or 30 miles.
And I'm going to cruise up to my spot in my canoe opening morning with three Walmart eras and some old Rage chisel tips. Crank a deer opening morning.
Hey, that's perfectly fine. I mean, I can kill any deer too if I want to. But I'm looking for certain deer.
How many sheds have you found, Brett?
This year, 14 sheds and two.
Unreal.
14. So I'm still good on the under. I'm still good when I took the under.
Yeah.
So far. Does that count for the one that we found in during our turkey hunt?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
What was your under, Chase?
I thought, didn't you, you said like 26 or 28 yeah. or something like yeah. that sheds. Yeah.
That's what I said.
The under, but
yeah, the under was a safe bet because I found them all last year.
Yeah, you found a ton last year. Well, sometimes it seems like you find like
a batch of them,
not that year, but like previous years sheds.
Yeah, yeah.
As
most
well.
Most of them are like that. I did find a really fresh one turkey hunting on a piece of public land that had to just fallen off within a week or so. Still had a little bit of red on the end of it.
Okay, nice. Mm.
Nice. Brett's like Mark Drury, dude, in the South, because he's the guy that goes into a spot and he's like, I killed this 10 point and here's all 6 years of its shits. And it's like he's found all of it. And it's so aggravating, man, because I have put in the kind of hours and time that he does, and I'll find like a spike shed and freak out like I just won the lottery. And Brett will get on polo while you're at work. It'll be a Thursday afternoon. You're just starting to feel good about the week. The weekend's getting here. You're almost done. And Brett will send you 13 consecutive polos with 13 sheds that he's found on a fresh burn. And it's just like, you just want to kick him out of the group, dude. It's so maddening.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I'm going to try to take some that new action cam I got and try to break down some of my trail camera spots and kind of what I'm thinking in that spot and why I put it there and just all my thoughts about that spot. Maybe it'll turn out something pretty good. Take some film of scouting period and see what it comes out to be.
I think that's something important to talk about. Note for everybody is Brett's already sent me the footage for a doe kill that he got on camera, self film this year. It's really cool. He just needs some help tweaking some of the files, and so I'm gonna help him with that. So that'll be on the YouTube channel. But what he's talking about is gonna land on the Chasing Tails Outdoors YouTube channel. So if you're listening to this and you want to follow along with the South Alabama legend, you know, I don't just say that facetiously. I genuinely mean it. I admire Brett's effort. I have no capacity to do what he does. But I love living vicariously through him because his vigor that he applies towards pursuing mature whitetail bucks in an area that in a big mature whitetail, not just like he's a 5-year-old 90-inch buck. I mean, he's going after some really stud deer in an area that's really hard to do that. He's going to be documenting that for you guys and bringing it to the channel. And I'm really excited to see the kind of misadventures that he and Ron get into this year, filming for each other and whatnot. It's going to be really fun.
Yeah, I'm hoping it all works out pretty good. I know sometimes with a buck, you don't have really the opportunity to get that camera on him, and I'm not going to miss my shot. But
yeah,
if I have the opportunity, I'm definitely going to give it my all. But more than likely with doe kills, it's going to be I'm going to get it on film or I'm not going to shoot her.
Mm. Ron's in agreement. He's going to bum his wife's GoPro. Is that your wife's GoPro?
Yeah, it's Hero 10. I bought it for her.
For your sister? Day. Oh, it's your wife's. Okay. Well, it's nice. Alabama, so.
Yeah, I don't live in Georgia. I live in Alabama, so.
Yeah, I know. Roll Tide, right? Yeah. Sister cousin.
Sister wife.
Sister wife. That's what I meant to say. Dadgummit. I messed everything up, I swear. But, all right, so it's a GoPro Hero 10 that you bought for your wife. What's up? Yeah. What's the deal?
I bought it for her because she loves saltwater fishing and she's been wanting to film a lot of her saltwater fishing or whatever. So yeah. I asked her if I could use it for hunting and you know, she was, I think she's going to let me. We'll see.
And Keller, yeah, we're going to get her some deer hearts. For
yeah, yeah. We'll get her some deer hearts. She loves deer hearts. So,
my kind of woman.
Yeah, it's always great when you can buy your wife a gift that you can use as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, God, so many jokes. there's kids listening to this, Walter. Jesus. So let's talk about gear for a second, because this is the time everybody's tinkering. And so the Patreon group is nonstop. In fact, to the point where Chase has basically said, I'll pipe in periodically, but I can't keep up. You know, he works 24/7. He's always doing something, you know? And so, you know, but the pulse over there is nuts. You guys jump from topic to topic to topic. And the coolest thing is, like, everybody knows a little bit about something in that group. And so it's bouncing from thing to thing to thing. In this little hodgepodge of a podcast we've got right now with the personalities, we've got two underlying traits. You've got two people in this group who like to tinker and two people in this group who do not like to tinker. I'm a tinkerer. Ron's a tinkerer. You two, Chase and Brett, y'all seem to just buy stuff and be happy with it. And I have a formal question on behalf of the Rons and the Walters. How do y'all do it?
I mean, I tinker a little bit. It's just not my thing. I there's so many other things that I feel like I could be doing. I'd rather spend time scouting, being out in the woods, looking at maps. Today's gear is premium anyways. So it's not like you have to tinker with every little thing to make it work. And I feel like a lot of that time could be better suited me scouting or putting out trail cameras, things like that, because that's how I feel like I get on the deer. My gear doesn't get me on the deer. Like, it helps me harvest the deer, but it don't get me on the deer. So if you're just spending a ton of time tinkering all the time, where if you could be spending that hour out scout, I'm one of those guys where it's like, if I have an hour, then I'm going to use that hour. I just don't go, okay, I only have an hour type thing. I would rather just go out, even just like this Yakking for Bass challenge. Like, if I have an hour to go fish, then I'm going to go use that hour to go fish instead of staying at home or doing whatever. So I just don't feel like I needed to tinker that much. And I watch some of y'all tinker, and it kind of intrigues me from time to time, but I'm also not a perfectionist. So me tinkering with stuff probably going to mess it up more than what it already is. So I'll just leave that to professionals.
Yeah. The Brits.
I would rather spend the money and buy quality gear and be able to use something like that for 5 or 6 years than to more or less go to buying cheaper and DIY and all. I'd rather just go ahead and buy one really quality gear, because there's some great stuff out there. And I will tinker, but my tinkering is going to be to more or less get my system down just a little better, something that makes it a little quieter, a little faster, a little easier, more or less. So it's going to be minor stuff. I would rather definitely be out in the woods doing things like that, shooting my bow. I kind of try to wait for rainy days or bad weather when I'm off to do more of my tinkering on those days, kind of like today. So I would just rather buy quality gear once and then doing more DIY stuff, because I'd rather spend my time out in the woods and doing something with that. There was something else I was going to say, but I can't think of it at the moment.
Right, while he thinks about that, Ron, did any of that make sense to you? I feel like they were talking Spanish or Portuguese or something.
Actually, honestly, it's right where I'm at now. Started last year.
Dadgummit.
Yeah. And Brett's kind of got me onto that, is in putting more time into that scouting and instead of my gear. So even though I've written all this down in an hour and a half, about gear stuff. I'm still a gear junkie. Don't get me wrong. I just had to tell myself no, and get figure out what prioritize what's more important, in my opinion.
Yeah, so. And I can get behind that too, in a sense that, you know, you guys are talking about like the spend that time scouting instead of tinkering and with stuff. For me, it hits a different chord. Last year, I kind of started to get out of it myself because I started wanting to go to other states. I had every intention of hunting Alabama. That obviously didn't work out. I hunt Georgia every year. That's a $305 license, I think, now, or $300-something license. And so, you know, gas is now $13 a gallon. And so it's one of those situations where it's like, I can keep sinking all this money into all this gear, or I can just take what works, you know, hunt from the ground if I'm not comfortable with my climbing setup until I can get a good climbing setup or whatever. You know, I'm looking for those pieces of gear that do everything. You can hunt from a saddle, from a sapling. If you need to, you know, have a good elevation to it, you can sit on your platform like Brett has talked about before, which is something I plan on doing this year. And so you have these options. And for me, I'd much rather do something now than buy something.
Yeah. And I mean, like on my platform, I did some tinkering with it to be able to do ground hunting. I mean, it was something I already had. We all know a good quality platform is pretty expensive. And I just do it like, I guess you would call it like Academy, Walmart, 1-inch pad that's got a little handle. And just put it over the basically the cleat and down the
like pose. A thermal rest pad, right?
Yeah, exactly. Gotcha. Like that. And I found it takes two for all day sit, but I just took them and slid over it, you know, did a little tinkering with that, you know, just minor stuff. And like back when I first met you and Chase, you know, I took away the Titan straps that you use for your sticks. That come in real handy. I really like them. And then really the biggest gear thing for me that I've done in the past 3 years or so has to be a saddle. I mean, for me. Going from climber and then big lock-ons to saddle really helped me out gear-wise. But I try to keep a bow for 6 to 8 years, and you know, I don't like swapping them up because I like to be real familiar with it and just be like second nature when you draw back and shoot. I don't like to change my bow a whole lot. I go and buy quality sights, quality strings. You know, I will change them about every 3 years, but. I try to get something and stick with it. That way it's just one last thing to think about when I'm out there, because muscle memory, and when you're changing your stuff all the time, you have to relearn how to use all that gear, because there could be something just a little different about it, like your sticks or a platform, or you change your saddles. You know, you got to take all your little things that's on your old saddle off and incorporate it.
Yeah.
I just like to find a system and stick with it and spend more time out in the woods as much as I can.
It took me a few years to learn that too. And now that I'm dialing in my system instead of changing different things, I feel like even, you know, that's why I feel like last year was, you know, a lot of my success, I would say, was because of that, instead of changing things up so much. So.
I think everybody has to dial into what makes them a good hunter, right? Like their style. You know, if to equate this to fishing, my comfort zone is top water. You give me a frog, I can go to just about any place in the South and I can find myself a fish. Give me a worm and I can bump it along the bottom somewhere and I can catch a fish. Those are my two go-tos. You ask me to use a jerk bait, a crank bait, stuff like that, I can't do it. It's just not my forte. With enough practice, I could. And I think everybody gets their own kind of hunting style down along the way as well. And I think that for me, the saddle has been instrumental in the elevated hunting game and getting places and doing stuff. I'm kind of excited for this ground game, because when I look at a lot of places around here, especially in Florida, especially on the panhandle, I see a lot of opportunities to hunt from the ground, and it's not as sexy, and it has its own drawbacks in some regards. You're not going to probably see as many deer, because if they're on the side of the bush, you might hear them and not get a shot. Brett's already kind of talked about how if he had had a gun, he would have killed some things. But I can tell you, man, I sweat a lot. And I don't like the heat, and we have a lot of that here. And the idea of reducing my pack to camera gear, which camera, tripod, and fluid heads, 3.5 pounds, a platform with a foam cushion to sit on, and a ghillie suit and a hydration bladder. Boy, and no setup time. I mean, we're talking, you walk to where you're getting to, you get there, you put it on the tree, and you sit down. Maybe you cut a couple branches out here and there to stick around you. But, man, the setup time to that. And then last year, one of the cool things was when, man, you get to a spot sometimes, you get set up, and it's like, man, I'm just not feeling this after an hour. You just pick up and move. You know, you put everything back in your bag real quick, and you just pick up and move. And I did that several times in the last two seasons and got on deer afterwards. Maybe I could have got them at the next spot, but my gut just told me I was in the wrong spot. And it wasn't one of these things like, God, I got to tear everything down, climb down the tree, put all the camera gear away. No, man, you just moved. You went with it. And I think I'm excited about this. I'm kind of excited to bum knowledge off of you, Brett, as we go, because I feel like you're obviously going to hunt about as much as Chase does, and that's pretty much every day. And so getting to see that progression is going to be really cool.
What you think about that, Chase?
Yeah, I mean, I like the ground game myself. I think that there's definitely some areas where I hunt where the ground game would be more effective. Heck, even when we were in Missouri this past season, there was a lot of areas where it was just no tree, really, especially for two people to get in Missouri. It was kind of a pain. And I felt like some of the spots we were like out of the game, so to speak, because we were trying to get two people in this one particular tree, whereas there was a couple of trees where I was like, well, I could get in that tree by myself probably, but with a second person, definitely couldn't. But there were definitely areas in Missouri where I could see that would be effective hunting on the ground. And like Walter mentioned, there's a ton of areas here in Florida where there's short pines, like thick short pines, where there's not a tree within a quarter mile that you could possibly even get into to hunt out of. So I like that Walter is pursuing the ground game. I mean, as far as me, I'll probably do it some. I'm not necessarily trying to bet anybody ghillie suits or being Bozo the Clown or anything, but I feel like that's probably, I mean, like you said, a weakness. Yeah, it's definitely a weakness because I just don't do it a whole lot. And Alabama deer, Florida deer, I mean, we know how skittish those deer are in Alabama and Florida. It doesn't take much for them to go blowing or to run 100 miles an hour in the other direction. Calling, you mentioned calling too, which calling is definitely just something I don't do very much of. I mean, grunt call, things like that, but actually like rattling and stuff like that, I've done it from time to time. I've never had an encounter with a deer from rattling, and it's probably just because I'm not doing it enough. I would say
definitely.
I mean, I've done it in the same place and had no reaction. And then certain times of the year had a lot of good action. So I almost feel like it could just be the time of the year and the location as well.
Yeah. And also I think finding that buck willing to do it that time of the year, right? Like you got to catch him in the right mood. And there's days if you were like, man, I'm gonna beat you up. Be like, okay, sounds good. Have at it. You know, like I really don't care, dude. My truck tire just blew out. I can't afford my mortgage. My dog just died. My wife left me. It's like, okay, just beat me up. I mean, this is good. And I just think like we forget that deer have, that's not based on any real factual events, but yeah, you know, it's one of those things where it's like deer have personalities too, and they get tired and they get frisky and they get aggressive, and they're some of them are wimps, man. Some of them, there are some bucks I've grunted to and those jokers just took off. I'm just talking like the scalded dog. Cousin Vinny has met with them before, and they do not want that butt whooping again. You know, it's just that they're gone. But I think, you know, I grunt all the time, bow season or not. I tell you why, I'm bored. I want to get down. I want to move. And I'm like, if I grunt, who knows what's going to happen? I'm just going to sit still for 15 more minutes, you know? I'd be like, bet. Okay, sit still. And I'd be like looking around, like, you know, and I can convince myself it's a mind game to sit still. The downside, the upside to that is I've had a lot of success grunting deer year round. I did the math on this, and I have shot at or shot 5 different bucks grunting. I have called in 11 deer grunting bucks wise, and I've called in 21 deer buck and doe grunt and doe bleats. And so, especially bow season in Florida, one of my favorite ways to call does in is to get that can, that doe and heat call, that can, and turn that joker over. I have called groups last year. I hunted near, I almost said something I shouldn't have said. I hunted a place that is loaded with deer, and I turned the doe and heat over one time during archery season, and I had 7 deer come down a trail just kind of looking like, oh, Stacy need, you know, she twisted her ankle or something. I don't know what they were thinking, but they just kind of came down meambling, right, got right to the edge of bow range and just kind of hung out there. And I couldn't get a shot. And I knew that that would probably work because during the rut the previous year, I was over there just freaking hammering that thing. Like there was just, you know, one really lone doe. And I had does come in the entire weekend. They just kept coming in, I couldn't shoot them because Florida hates does. But, I call all the time, man, and I have a blast doing it and a fair amount of success, I think.
Yep. I know one thing I got to try to get this year is I want to try to get a new range finder. I've had mine for at least probably 10 years, maybe more. It's getting on up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had a few times that it didn't want to work right. So I'm getting where I'm going to have to get me a new one of them here pretty soon.
Hopefully. Same here. I got the old Simmons right here.
Yes, sir.
It needs to be replaced. I've had it 4 or 5 years. It's been a great one, but it's just time for a new one.
Yeah. And were any of y'all changing up your setup stuff? Wasn't one of y'all getting some new sticks or something?
I got the Timber Ninja sticks.
Okay, that's right.
For this year. So I'm going to have to get with you, Brett, just to incorporate the suader. You use the suader, right?
Yeah.
He uses the canader.
The suader. Not the nader, but the suader. So, but I've got long legs. And,
yeah.
And really in Florida, you don't really have to get above about 13, 14 feet, honestly, in most of the areas. I got four of the sticks with the aiders. I'm pretty sure I can get up to maybe 18, 19 feet or something like that with those 4 sticks, with the aider. If I had the suader, I'm sure I could probably get up 30 feet. Would be my guess for that. But I'm going to have to carry the bow a ton again this year because I'm back in the bow hunters league.
Are you?
Brett.
Oh, that's right.
And we added Brandon Ogden, who's been on the podcast. And we should be dropping
an invite.
His YouTube video here soon.
Thumbnail. It's waiting on you.
Oh, okay. It's just waiting on me. I figured you would just.
Oh, if you want me to. Yeah, I can do it.
Yeah,
do
just it right now. That thing.
This, the turkey one? Or?
Yeah, it's the turkey one.
Okay.
It's the turkey hunt. But he's going to be one of the members. I mean, we're basically competing for our state. The three of us combined aren't going to do any damage as a team unless we all strike gold in Missouri. But even then, I mean, the winners are averaging like 170-inch deer.
Especially with Brandon on that lineup.
We got 2 Florida and an Alabama. So it's not like – and there's teams with 3 people from Iowa on there. So
a bunch of them.
Yeah. If we had all drawn Iowa this year, I was like, our chance of winning is – if it could be negative, it would be negative for us winning the Bow Hunters Challenge. But I was like, if we all 3 drew Iowa, then I would give us a percentage chance of winning, like 0.05% chance of winning the bow hunters league. Because some of them guys, I mean, it seems like they're averaging like 170 inches per team member or something like that for a deer. So that's going to be out of reach, but we can, the cool part about it is you can win your state, which I think Brett, you won Alabama last year, right?
Yep, I did.
So Brett actually won the state of Alabama for the bow hunters league last year with that buck that he killed.
How many inches was that?
It was like 115 and 2/8, I believe.
There's a lot of people out there right now listening to this that are thinking they can knock you off your throne, sir.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a big buck by no stretch for Alabama, but this is bow hunting only with a no crossbows, basically a vertical bow only. And is just for the members of the bow hunting league, whoever signs
right,
up.
Right, you got to actually sign up for it.
It's not against everybody by no means.
No, he definitely didn't win the state.
It was really cool because I actually won a free shoulder mount, all kinds of different prizes. I actually just got in some more prizes this week. I won a big free. It's like a Yeti company.
Ed Gum.
They sent me like a tumbler, a 32-inch tumbler. I got some fixed blade broadheads, stickers, some more koozies.
Ed Gum it.
Something else. I won Zinger, Fletchings. There's a cool company out there called Paget. They make decals. You send them a picture of you, or that you send them a picture of your buck, and they actually make a sticker of your buck. It's exact rack. And they send it to you. They have a picture of the deer that you killed. It's like a vinyl decal. So that was really cool. They sent two of them, two different ones.
So you got them like in the back of your truck, huh?
Do what?
You got that thing plastered in the back window of your truck?
Oh, no. I don't want nobody to see all that. I put one of them on that new cup I got. And then the other one's going on my cooler I got. It's kind of like a Yeti cooler, but not a Yeti. It's one I won at a turkey banquet about 5 years ago.
Nice.
Dadgummit. All right, so anybody who's listening to this podcast, over the course of doing this podcast, I have now published a much-anticipated banded Florida turkey. So, excuse the fact that it's a hen. He had never shot a turkey before, and he saw the jewelry and just pulled the trigger. We've contacted the authorities, but you know, we can only do so much.
Yeah.
Brandon called me the other day, man. He's got some high expectations for this year.
Yeah, he does. He's he's coming. He's got a whole week blocked out for one of the WMAs that we hunted last year.
My birthday week.
Late season. Mm-hmm. He was texting me about, was like, hey, you going to come? And I'm like, yeah, I'll come up there for a few days and hunt with you guys. So, but that's like a late season hunt. We're going back to Missouri again this year. We will not be up there the same time as Brett. So that more than likely. Depending on the weather, we won't
be
able to
leaving sometimes. When y'all are getting there.
Yeah, so Brett will be able to give us a good scout and report. Yeah. And we have all of Brett's pins now, so we know exactly where to hunt.
But I had to work for him last year.
Oh, yeah, exactly. No, that's true, very true. So I'm not too worried about it.
I need that pin where he shot that deer from the ground, man. Have we had Brett? Have we had you on to talk about that, man?
I don't think so. I really don't remember if I've even talked to anybody about them deer at all. Either one of them.
Is the statute of limitations up? Can you actually tell the story?
I don't know. Depends.
You need to tell everybody because this is like wicked cool. This is like the thing of like
actually I think we did talk about that Missouri deer.
Yeah, I think he was on last we talked about it.
Yeah, because I think Chase, Brandon, and myself, I think we may have talked about that one already.
Yeah.
God knows. 23-inch fish just got submitted.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's so long ago, I can't remember.
Do it again.
So along the gear, so along the lines of like preparation, right? Going into this, what's on the mind of the greats right now? Like, what I'm going to shut up because I'm not in that company, but I'm curious, like, what's on y'all's agenda? What are you doing right now to get ready for deer season?
Well, obviously for me is I'm trying to work on my ground game, trying to find a way to be able to seal the deal on the bucks that I've had close encounters on, but encounters are great, and there's a lot to be learned from encounters and mistakes, but now I got to take the mistakes, turn them around, and make some success out of them. So I'm determined to kill one in there on the ground with my bow, and hopefully on film if I'm able to. But I've been working on that ghillie cape hat, rechecking my bow. I've been out shooting my bow, getting ready, making sure that I'm shooting it, staying familiar with it. And then I still, like I said earlier, I plan on building some more stuff that goes on my bow for my draw hand. And then I'm doing a lot of research on different chairs, possibly different ways to set up on the ground other than the platform that could make things easier.
Yeah, you know, I keep going back to what Graybeard said about that little collapsible aluminum chair that he's got that, like, just goes in the bottom of his backpack and never comes out. Is that what you're kind of talking about, or?
Yeah, I mean, like, it could be something like, it could be anything. I mean, I'm looking at, like, a turkey stool that's more like four legs and it's got, like, a trampoline seat type deal on it. I'm looking at that where you kind of lower to the ground, possibly. Looking at maybe some type of chair like that, or like a three-legged chair that it's kind of like a turkey chair, but it may be like it swivels, so it's like a minimalist, but I can still swivel and pivot to get the shot I need, you know, if I have a deer coming in from a side I'm not expecting it to come in or something. I'm just trying to figure out what that best way is still. That's what I'm working on right now during the off-season. So hopefully I can capitalize during season. Along with scouting and running trail cameras.
All right, Chase, what's going on in your world, man? What are you doing in your off-season besides ditch pickles for life?
All I'm doing right now is ditch pickles for life. Other than making plans – for hunts that I'm going to do this year, I put in for my archery quotas the other day for my, going back to the last episode, put in for the quotas. And then once this fishing tournament's over, I'll start diving into it more, getting out there, shooting my bow, probably scouting some. There's a couple of, I need to get out and do some scouting for the Patreon hunt coming up in September. So I plan on at least getting out there, getting a lay of the land for the Patreon hunt. And that's pretty much it though right now. I'm not hardcore this time of year. I'm going to be honest with you. More into the fishing right now. So once that's over, then I'll dive into it. I've found that I don't enjoy going out this time of year for Florida and scouting because it's so hot and a lot of the areas I hunt are super thick right now. And it's just, I don't really feel that I learn that much right now. Mm-hmm. Most of my scouting is in season, honestly, with boots on the ground. In-season scouting, I prefer to do that. And then I did a ton of scouting during turkey season,
So I did do quite a bit of scouting during turkey season when I was out. So those are my major scouting times is turkey season, during the season. And then I will do some kind of in the summer. Just kind of depends.
Gotcha. Yeah, I found that summertime scouting in Florida has been kind of hit or miss. There have been some places I've gone that have been like really productive in the summertime. Most times it's not. Ironically, the places I'm talking about ground hunting are actually some of the places that have been most productive for me summertime scouting, which I think kind of bodes well for what's going to happen this year. But you know, South Georgia is a totally different thing. It's like in South Georgia, you can go up there, you can find deer sign, you can come back to it come October, and there's deer there. And it's like, that was predictable. That's what Dale, John Eberhardt's talking about. When you go out there and you scout and deer have predictable movements and stuff, I was like, dude, South Georgia boys, anybody other than Florida boys don't know how good they've got it. I don't care if your deer density is one deer per square mile or not. Deer do deer things everywhere but here.
Yeah, there's some areas – there's a lot. Well, and I'm sure that is like everywhere else. Like you can run trail cameras in that spot 365 days a year, mm-hmm. and there will be deer show up in a 10-day window in that area. And that's the only 10 days that they're going to be in that area for the entire season, that you're going to catch them on camera for the entire season.
Yeah, you've got a spot just like that, actually. Several spots like that.
Yeah. And a lot of the public, private, same type thing where it's just going to be on fire those 10 days. If you're there those 10 days, you're golden. If you're not, then you're going to be out of luck. And there are some areas where I have found that I'm able to pattern the deer a little bit more regular, but it makes it difficult. And I, like I said, in the summertime, I can go back and look at old sign and stuff like that, but and try to make a guess to when that sign was made, but I could be off if I'm not in there getting that fresh sign or not running trail cameras in that area. If I'm running trail cameras, then I mean, I rely heavily on trail cameras to try to give me that data. I know Brett relies heavily on trail cameras, at least documenting trail cameras to where, okay, this is the window I need to be in this area. Cause if I'm not, then I'm not doing myself any good. Cause I've hunted areas like that before where I've just gone and was like, oh, there's tons of deer sign in here. I'm going to hunt here and sit there, see nothing. Then all of a sudden light switch turns on and you get, there was nine different bucks cruising through there in a 4 or 5 day window of that area during that 7 to 10 day period. So I feel like that's why I really rely on that, like in-season scouting to go back. All right, this is when it was made. These are when these scrapes mm-hmm. started popping up. Cause I can go, oh, there's a scrape there, but I have no idea when it was made. Even if I find it in the summer, it could have been made in September or it could have been made in Florida. It could have been made in September. Could have been made in October. Could have been made in November. So if I'm hunting it at the wrong time, then I'm not doing myself any favors.
Mm-hmm. As Ron's been up in his game, he's big on the cell cams, man. And excuse me, guys. He's been getting a lot of really big deer on camera, like oh, toads, wow. Dude. You posted one the other day to the Discord group, wasn't it? You? It was like a freaking hammer that you pulled off one of your cards.
No, I don't think that was me. It's been a while.
Hold on. I think it was you, man. I think it was. I think you're sleeping on us because. You posted one not too terribly long back, and it was maybe it was like back in actually the season.
I know I saw Brett a week or so ago.
Hang on, I'm gonna go back here and look because I thought you posted one that just looks like a freaking hammer, dude. No, that was Kyle. That was Kyle.
Yeah.
Well, that's more than cool. So I was gonna add to Chase. I think he's exactly right, and you're either. Well, I wouldn't say you're either, but I'd say your best times is going to be in-season scouting or post-season scouting. Because either way, you're either looking at fresh sign in-season or like with post-season, you're looking at sign that was laid down during the time you can actually hunt those deer. And all that rut activity is laid down If you know your area, you know what time they come in to rut. If you don't, use trail cameras to figure that out. But I've seen the same thing Chase has. I know of plenty of spots. You will hardly catch a deer at all. But you get that 1 month window or three to four week window, and you may not have a ton of deer in there, but you're going to have the right buck. He's going to be showing up using those areas certain times of the year, and there may not even be that much sign laid down in there. And it's just spending time in the woods and figuring that out. Mm-hmm. And like he said, we rely a lot on trail cameras to help figure that stuff out. One of the places I've killed a nice buck in is like that. There's hardly any deer sign in there, but the right time of the year, they're going to be using it to check on does and stuff. So yeah. I just find the best scouting is going to be your in-season and post-season. Now, you can find a sign during this time of the year, but it's going to be more subtle. It's going to be older, so it's subtle, it's hard. You got to rely on your woodsmanship to kind of know what you're looking at. But I use this time to still scout, but I also run cameras because they do no good sitting on my shelf. And I'm looking back at does when they're dropping their fawns, confirming when they did go into heat and when they got bred, using that for the next year. So just learning anything I can at all. But I just still like being out in the woods, walking. There's still stuff to learn. It may not apply beginning of the season because you may be looking at sign that was rut sign. But come rut time the next year, that will apply. And then the stuff you're finding in the off season is places to go try while you're waiting on your good spots. Mm-hmm. To basically that window to come in. You're waiting on the right weather, the right week to go in that spot. You know, you always see good deer. That's when you go try all these other spots you found during the off season. Or for me, that's kind of what I do.
Oh yeah. Makes sense. You don't, cause like I said, you can burn some of those areas out if you get in there before that time. Yeah. By busting the does out or whatever.
For that new spot. You're always looking for that new spot or next great spot. So you're always moving, learning, preserving your deer, figuring out what you can.
Oh, yeah. Everything's changing. I mean, I've had spots that were jam up for 2-3 years in a row, and then the next year they were just cold as ice. Like nothing was coming through there that next year. So you're right. You constantly need to be out there scouting. And that'll your in-season scouting will help you with that a little bit. And I mean, if it was more enjoyable, Brett, I would be out there more during the summertime. But I mean, if you're not sprayed down with permethrin from head to toe and got your snake boots on and everything else, mm-hmm. and just as thick as it is, I feel like my time could be spent doing hanging out with the kids or doing stuff, fishing, doing things like that. And then, dive into it hardcore a little bit later.
That's the great thing about deer hunting. There's no one way to do it. There's probably 1,000 different ways to be successful. And you just have to, like Walter said earlier, find out the way that you like to hunt and your method and kind of go with that. Take things away from other people who are similar to yourself and just to help you along that journey.
Yeah. And I think I like to let my trail cameras do the heavy lifting right now. I want to know when the deer are coming through, dropping the does in Florida. When you have as unpredictable a rut as you do in Florida, I found that finding when the does in that area, I killed my big buck in 2020 because I let a long camera soak for the entire season. I went and pulled it, and I was able to chronologically see when the different patterns occurred, and it didn't match what I had been told and what the DNR map had told me for that spot. And so it was one of those situations where it was most people were putting in for this hunt, and I knew I needed to put in for that hunt because those does were there. A, those does were still there because there were no hunters there. B, there were no hunters there, so I knew I kind of had that spot to myself. And C, I had – Chase and I did this. I think it was like – it was years and years of data. The idea being if you had sat there every day to like visibly capture the information that came by that camera, it would have been years of sits there, you know, to have been there all of those days to know when those deer had come through. And so for me, this time of year, man, we live in the fishing capital of the world down here in Florida. There's excellent fishing up there by y'all. The scouting right now isn't super productive. And so I kind of shift gears to tinkering with gear. So I'm getting the GNU up and running, because water access for me is going to be the backbone of what I do for my big bucks. Now, hunting from the ground is going to be great for a lot of these quicker hunts, hunting closer to the house in some of these areas. I think I can get in there and tactically strike a lot of these areas when I only have maybe 2-3 hours, because I don't have to drive a long distance. I don't have a long setup time. I can just get in there and set up. But I have had a fair amount of success recently, taking like the month before the season and going out there and checking food sources and starting to take inventory on food sources about a month before the season, and knowing which persimmons are going to be dropping, which oak trees are going to be dropping, looking at the acorns caps from the previous year to kind of have an idea of when things are going to be dropping. And then I do a lot of scouting throughout the year. A lot of my hunts, I hunt during the premier point of the day, you know, the first 2-3 hours of the hunt. And then after that, I'm just moving and I'm creeping. I got an arrow knocked and I'm just creeping through that swamp, learning things, creeping through that pine flat, learning things, observing deer paths and stuff like that. I've got too many things pulling me in too many directions. And I think that might be one of the biggest benefits to the Patreon group that we haven't talked about, is the ability to go about your life and let the Brett Mashburns teach you what they're doing in the off season so that you can replicate that. Cause anybody can do this bucket cap thing that he's talking about. Anybody can drive in the AC condition, the air conditioning of their car, and find these spots to go hunt. You know, you can get on your maps and do things. Spartan Forge, shameless plug. While I was sitting here, the thought occurred to me, I can go to the new Lambda feature. And I went to one of my spots and I went and scrolled through 13 different aerial photographs of that area. And you saw the different habitats change. I was like, oh, wait. And I backed up and I found a pocket of oaks inside there. Now you give me dense bedding cover and some kind of scrub oak that could be dropping acorns in early season. I mean, I did that sitting on the couch. Well, I'm sitting in the chair, but you could do it sitting on the couch, and you could be learning these ideas for people like Brett being part of that digital deer camp. So I'm glad you two are part of it for sure. They're super enthusiastic as well. You can tell they were paid to be here.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely like interacting with the Marco Polo group. We have a lot of fun over there. And a lot of great highlights have been brought up lately.
Yeah, and we're working on that. We got a special project where we're pulling all of the greatest hits. And I said to the Patreon members, I was like, hey, tell me what your greatest hits are. And so everybody's been sending me polos. I didn't realize how many things got saved in that group, which is a little frightening on my part. But y'all have been bombarding me with these polos, and so we're going to do a special intro. I'll go ahead and tease it now. We're going to do a special Patreon intro podcast intro for you guys, and it's going to be nothing but clips and snippets from some of the highlights that have happened, because I want you guys to see what goes on in that group. It is hysterical.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, they're definitely busy.
I'm more of a listener, because all these guys got a bunch of knowledge like Brett. Split Shot, Gray Beard, Florida Man. It
goes Split Shot for sure.
And I'm more of a listener. I try to take in as much as possible.
Yeah, it's kind of like its own podcast itself. Like yeah. It's like it's a whole day long of like podcast kind of little snippets that you can take away. I mean, I tune in from time to time, but I mean, there's days where I don't look at my phone, I'm at work or whatever, and then I pop that thing up, it's like 130 new polos, and I'm like, there's no way, even well in twice the speed. I'm like, sometimes I'll just set it and play it kind of in the background to keep up with what everybody's doing, but it's definitely the group members that keep that thing running. I mean, yeah. There's every day, there's the core group of guys that are getting on every day saying, what's up, tail chasers, or question of the day. There's always Graybeard. Yeah. What's up, tail chasers? There's always Walter with his question of the day going on, and a lot of time, like, I'm not touching this. I'm not getting involved in this question of the day. But it's good to hear the responses, and like you mentioned, there's a lot of knowledge in there from gear setups, hunting, and a lot of these guys reach out to each other and get together, hunt together. There's a lot of guys that hunt close to each other, go scouting together. I mean, it really is a great place to hang out. New hunter, experienced hunter. I mean, you're going to take away something from it.
Mm.
Yeah, and for me, for instance, I'm a pretty solo hunter, and this is my group that I actually get to share my experiences with. Like when I shoot a deer or something, I have somebody to tell and show my enthusiasm with. I mean, from that aspect, it's really cool because it's like your own deer camp right there in your hand, in your pocket, you know, and everybody really, really great people. And you learn a whole lot more than just deer hunt. There's all kinds of stuff talked about.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's been a deer mentor group. It's been a fishing mentor group. It's been a life coaching group. We've had people go through like traumatic, several people have gone through some really traumatic stuff and life-changing events, and the group's been there for them, and everybody roots them on. And sometimes people have things to contribute that have been awesome. So, it's been awesome.
I just had a thought go through my head of this is early days, Marco Polo. I don't even think he's a Patreon anymore, but literally gets home, has a note on the table, say, or his yes! girlfriend or wife was like, I'm leaving you. I mean, he was hunting a lot. Like,
but in his house and everything.
Yeah. It goes and he's like, well, I lost another one, guys, from hunting. Yeah. And I'm like, is this really happening on Polo? Yeah. Was it Tim? He comes on there and I'm just like, holy cow. But I mean, it's like, what do you say to that? You kind of be there for the guy or whatever and support him. But yeah, I mean, they said there's all kinds of stuff that goes on that Marco Polo for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. it's a hoot over there, man.
Would you rather questions?
Well, okay. Let's close out with this. And I think, so first off, I just had an idea. We're doing a would you rather round table sometime real soon, and we're gonna have a blast with this. And I think what I'm gonna do is we're gonna pull would you rather questions from the Patreon group, get together a group of guys, and do a would you rather podcast. And I think that's one where we have to be drinking beer or something, because that one needs to get sporty for sure. There you go, the gold label. But I'm gonna postulate the question just to give you guys a snippet, just a little taste of what happens in this group. I'm gonna give you guys the question. I don't think Chase answered this one. You two answered this one, but I don't think Chase answered this one. So Chase, would you rather fight a chicken every time you get in your car, or would you rather fight an orangutan once a year with a melee weapon of your choice?
Ooh, that one's going to be tough, boy. Cause I mean, that orangutan's probably going to kick my butt. So I get a weapon of my choice, and I only got to fight it. I got to fight it once a year.
Melee weapon of your choice. Yeah. You don't get like a 30 cal rifle. You can just pop them from a mile.
Okay. So
away,
I get a melee weapon.
Yeah.
So once a year for the rest of my life, or I have to fight a chicken every day for the rest of my life inside.
Every
my
time
vehicle.
You get in your car. Yeah.
Oh gosh. I'm going with the orangutan just cause I ain't got that kind of time, boy.
That's what I'm talking about.
I'm going with the orangutan once a year for the rest of my life. I mean, geez.
Think of the pay-per-views you can make, all the money you can make.
Now the chicken, I mean, I'm going to have a lot of chicken breasts probably. I mean, obviously. So, I mean, there is that, but yeah, I mean, I don't want to have to deal with that every time I get inside my vehicle. So
just like, think about it. Think about the food costs. Your wife's like, I don't have anything to make. Hold on, honey. You grab a baseball bat. You walk out to your car. You open the car door and you just whack a chicken that you can fry for dinner. I mean, I'm just saying.
Like, well, just think about the damage that chicken's probably doing inside your vehicle.
Oh, that's true. Were you rhino line the inside of your car?
I mean, does it just pop up like the second you open the door?
Yeah.
Or is it just
here's
in your vehicle?
Thing. Here's
the whole
other
time.
Thing you don't know, Chase. If you die via the orangutan, is it all over? I didn't say you get reincarnated. It's not like you just what do the gamers call it? When you just like repopulate in the game. Like you don't just like wake up the next day like, whoo, spawn.
I mean,
spawn,
what,
thank you.
What if I have the skill to turn that thing into my pet and then I have this cool orangutan?
I think that's a stretch. The would you rather was a fight. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like a chicken being in your vehicle every time you open the door is a stretch.
But here's the deal. How are you going to capture it if you don't know when it's going to pop up, Chase? You're just walking through the woods like, oh, look at that deer. Whack, orangutan, knocks you out. You're done.
Yeah, but I have a melee weapon of my choice. So obviously a melee weapon is going – I would never carry a melee weapon, and then I have a melee weapon, and it's going to pop up.
So. You know, orangutan will literally rip your arms off of you. They're so strong. If they get their hands on you, you're done.
Okay.
And one day you'll be old age and you won't be able to compete against them. And
he'll beat you with them old arms.
Who says that the orangutan is an adult male? I mean, you didn't mention any of that. It could have been just a little baby orangutan.
Are you going to beat a baby orangutan to death? Is that what you just said on the podcast?
I said that I was going to turn it into a pet. I said I was going to turn it into a pet, Walter. Nothing says that I can't trap the thing.
Some kids on the way to school having listened to this podcast, and their favorite animal is an orangutan. And Chase is like, I might be able to kill a baby orangutan every year. I mean, this works out perfect, you know? Like,
I never said I would ever kill the orangutan.
You got to fight it. You got to fight it.
Yeah, but I mean, heck, I could probably use Brett's ghillie suit and trap the thing.
Oh, man.
But yes, right, that's a difficult decision for sure.
Yeah. Brett, are you team fajitas? Are you team chicken, what? Team fajitas? Or are you team orangutan? Yeah.
I'm chicken.
Yeah, me too. Let's see. There we go.
I don't want to get about 60 years old and orangutan rip my dang arms off of my body and I die. I can live for a long time with chickens.
Daggum right.
That way I can keep hunting for a little longer.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate y'all taking time out your evening. This is a blast. I told Chase, I was like, hey, man, I'm going to get Brett to come on the podcast. He's like, well, see if he's available. And I'm like, he's available. And then I told Chase, I was like, yo, if you can't get on the podcast, I'm going to reach out to Brett and get him on the podcast. And Chase is like, okay, cool. And then I was like, screw it. I'm calling Brett anyway, or texting Brett anyways, or Ron. And Ron's like, yeah, man, win. I'm like, when you got those ride or dies like that, man, you're set. So I appreciate everything you guys do for the group, being a part of the Patreon group, always spreading gear and deer knowledge and having a good time and keeping up with the bold predictions and the random shenanigans I come up with, Ron. I know that's a full-time job, but
it's great. It's fun.
It's great to have you guys there. And if you're listening to this and you would rather answer some would you rather questions throughout the course of the day and pick the brains of these fellas and listen to some of my ridiculousness. Now I will say this, some of my questions of the day, I literally just walk in, kick the hornet's net over and shut the door behind me, and I don't check it for like 100 polos behind me. So it's they can be some humdingers, but but if you want to be a part of that, check it out. The link's in the show notes, or you can go to Chasing Tales, TALES outdoors.com/Patreon, and it'll take you there. There's a variety of ways. Just Google it. It's not that hard. And we'd love to have you over there. We'd love to just fish and talk and have a good time. So until next time, no matter what you do, get outside and enjoy the great outdoors.